Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. San Antonio-based artist Kathy Sosa is known for her paintings of women. Many wear traditional indigenous garments known as huipiles, which have garnered their own separate series from Sosa. The women in this art are sometimes adorned by wings and elaborate trees of life, an indigenous symbol that tells a story of creation. Each árbol de la vida in Sosa's paintings tells the story of the woman whose place in history ranges from thousands of years to modern times. The women's gazes range from gentle to knowing to melancholy to dignified, and they gaze right at you. Their faces are shaded with the colors of the rainbow in a technique that looks completely organic. The women's hands are strong and often hold an item that symbolizes part of their life story. Kathy Sosa's colorful art has been seen in galleries across North America and in San Antonio Public Art. It's also been collected and published in the new volume, Mestizaje, The Feminist Art of Kathy Sosa. Sosa was a latecomer to the art world, encouraged to take the leap by her artist husband, Lionel Sosa. She explains how she approaches drawing hands and faces, often the most difficult parts of the body, to illustrate.
So I skipped the drawing faces part because I started art school at the point I did, which is, it was probably, I don't know, I don't recommend it really. To tell you the truth, I don't recommend skipping all the basics and going straight. I don't. But the truth is, you're right. And so what I do is I don't necessarily draw the face except the basic lines of the face. How big is the face? What is the shape of the face? Is it hard? Is it oval? Is it where the ears are? I just use a bare line, and then I create the face out of shapes. And the thing is about color is that if you pick the right color, you're also describing light and shadow. So the shapes on what I would call the shadow side of the face, and I don't try to paint people who were seeing them straight on with the same light on either side of the face. That's too hard. I need some shadow to give the face some dimension so I can see the shapes. I have this place on my back porch where I take pictures of people that I want to paint. And in this magic place on my back porch, I can see these colors in your face. Because there's way more colors in a face than you think. You don't use the flesh-colored crayon out of the box, you know. You see that there's, you know, there's red in the nose, there's red in the ears, there's red in the cheeks. There's blue on the shadow side of the face. So that's what we're looking at when we're looking at this book and when we're looking at these women. It are people, faces that are constructed out of shapes of color.
So a lot of this art is now in this book, Mestizaje, The Feminist Art of Kathy Sosa. Explain the term mestizaje.
Okay.
Or mestizaje, I was saying it incorrectly.
Mestizaje. So goes back to the encounter between the European and the indigenous in this hemisphere. And when people meet, the ones that don't die because of the germs that the other guys brought, the people who are left, some of them embrace the visitor, some of them fight the visitor, some of them fight and then embrace the visitor. But there is always a commingling of cultures and peoples, and from the beginning, intermarriage of different people. And that's the origin of the mestizo. Mestizo literally means mix. In particular, I'm describing the mestizaje of this region and the mestizaje that is ongoing. This is something that is everywhere around us. It's everywhere. It's the food we eat is different than any other place. The Spanglish we speak is different than any other place. The music we hear is different from any other place. This is a culture unto itself. This isn't the only place it's ever happened. It's happened all over the world where two countries align or overlap and people travel back and forth to live their lives because their lives are in a certain place and the lines don't have much to do with them until, you know, you gotta have problems like that we won't talk about until we have another show. So I am intrigued and in love with the mestizaje, and I maybe because I was born in another place, it was something I could observe, right? It's easier to observe something that hasn't always been for you. So I love this idea. I love this concept. I think it describes uniquely what's going on around us. And I think that it needs to be this concept that describes us needs to be celebrated and elevated, because there are forces in the world who would want us to be fearful. And why should we be fearful? We are who we are. You can't tell us to be fearful of who we are. I had a dear friend, Virgilio Elizondo, and his is the first quote in the book, "The Future is Mestizo," which is the title of his book. And he said to me one time, "You know, Kathy, in less than 500 years, the whole country is going to look like San Antonio right now. It is inevitable. It's irrevocable. You cannot change the tide of people who need to move for humanistic reasons. You can't do it. You can try. You can demonize. You can do whatever you want, but it ain't going to work. So what we need to do is to embrace each other. And we need to understand the beauty of cultural change and demographic changes as they, it's not something abstract. It's something that's happening in my home." So I say that I fell in love with the mestizaje when I first arrived, and I married it twice, and I gave birth to two of its children.
You're so part of it yourself.
I am an active participant. And I want people to know how great and wonderful, how open our eyes and hearts should be to how what the special thing is that we have going on.
Well, what makes your art feminist?
You know, I think it's the concentration on the feminine form, and the fact that all the women look you straight in the eye. And the other thing is that the women are, almost everything I paint that features a woman is designed to say, women are strong and at the center of everything good. And I've been told that that's a feminist notion, and I have accepted that and with pride. So mostly the women are wider of shoulder and more muscular than you see a lot of times as women are painted in art, and the hands are bigger. I do that on purpose. I heard one time from a child psychologist that if a child draws a person, let's say a parent, let's say their mom, with teeny little hands or feet, it means they see that person as powerless. And I look back in portrayals of art and women in art history, and I think the hands and the feet have been diminished somewhat in proportion to reality. Maybe not on purpose, but I do mine on purpose. I make the hands bigger on purpose. I make the shoulders bigger on purpose. I make something that projects strength while still being feminine, and I do that to make that point.
Kathy Sosa is an internationally renowned artist whose works are collected in the volume Mestizaje, The Feminist Art of Kathy Sosa. When we come back, Kathy Sosa's paintings are filled with color, imagery, and symbolism.
I try to paint something that you can look at it many, many, many different times, and each time maybe see something you didn't see before.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. The cover of artist Kathy Sosa's book, Mestizaje, The Feminist Art of Kathy Sosa, is an encapsulation of the styles for which she's known. It's called Vamos al Flea Market, Portrait of Abuela as a Young Woman on My Mind. The On My Mind part of this title is applied to Sosa's paintings that feature elaborate traditional trees of life that blossom from behind women's heads. The Abuela as a Young Woman has her long hair pulled up into side buns high on her head. She holds close to her body a small home in her arms. Green butterfly wings with blue polka dots sprout from her back. On the wings is written, Vamos al Flea Market, or Let's Go to the Flea Market. The tree of life above and behind her head is adorned with white and red flowers, a rooster, a bottle of whiskey, and a small chapel. And she's wearing a pink and white top that reads, Cushada. Sosa explains the meaning behind this work and how she works similar techniques into her other portraits.
People are going to get, after we talk about this, people might understand that there's maybe too much symbolism and all this. But it's all, I try to paint something that you can look at it many, many, many different times, and each time maybe see something you didn't see before. So this is a painting that was commissioned by a young woman friend of mine, and it is about her relationship with her grandmother. So it's called Portrait of Abuela as a Young Woman. This young woman looks a lot like her grandmother looked at her age. And her grandmother still lives, and so she made an appointment for us to go and spend the day with her grandmother out in Elmendorf. So we went and we listened to the stories of Abuela all morning and looked through all the pictures. And so when I accept a commission like that, I'm sort of weird. I say, you know, I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and you don't like it.
Too bad.
It's too bad. I'm not going to show it to you halfway through so you can make suggest changes. No, I don't do any more, Norma. I can't. So I got so excited. Now, Cushata, it's indigenous, but in this case, it represents the casino where grandma goes with all her girlfriends when they get their Social Security checks. The house she's holding symbolizes her house. And so the flowers that you see, those are my interpretations of the white wildflowers that were in a big expanse of her backyard the day I was there. On the wings, it says, Vamos al Flea Market, because she loves to go to the flea market.
Again, that Spanish mestizaje
that's
blending.
That's Spanglish. And that's the way we talk, right?
Yeah.
That's the way we talk.
Yeah.
In the limbs of the tree around her head, it says, Comfort Comida, comfort food. Because this young woman's family used to live behind the grandmother on her property, and the grandmother would cook, and you could smell when dinner was almost ready, and you'd be so excited to run over to Abuela's and have your meal. There's whiskey in the picture because grandma taught her young sons how to drink whiskey, which do not mix anything with your whiskey, and you'll be okay.
Oh.
Straight, and you'll be fine. You won't have a headache or anything. The rooster above her head represents the grandfather for reasons I will not explain.
Okay.
And then, the little church at the top is the church in Sospamco, Texas, where the grandmother and grandfather married. And then there are these tendrils of flowers hanging down that have real and made-up Spanglish words that describe the grandmother, like jugadora. Tortillista, she made her own tortillas for everybody.
Pistolera,
she owned a cantina, so she had to have a pistol, and she taught her sons how to use them. Benefactora, because she, if anybody, doesn't have to be family, has some kind of emergency and needs money, she will start cooking and sell plates off her front porch until the goal is reached for that person. The butterfly wings have to do with the fact that when, you know, the granddaughter who commissioned the painting, she was in a coronation as a teenager, and her grandmother made her dress and sewed, along with her mother, the sequins and built these beautiful butterfly wings that were a part of her dress for her coronation. So every single thing in there means something in particular, but even if you didn't know that, I'm hoping that you would enjoy the painting and thinking to yourself about what these things might mean.
And it's a really great, I think, introduction to what people will see in the book. Pretty much everything that is in this painting, there are touches of it in the rest of your art. So how was it between you and Trinity University Press? Mm-hmm. How difficult was it for you to pick what was going to be included in this volume?
It was pretty difficult. It really was. And I'm finding, I thought that I had invested in a really great high-resolution capture of almost everything I've ever painted. And that's one thing that really made the book possible, because many of these of the works featured here have been sold and then sold and sold. And I wasn't even aware who they were sold to the first time, so I wouldn't know where to go looking for them to shoot a picture of them today. So that was very, very lucky. But since the advent of putting the book to bed, I'm running into pictures that I forgot I painted. Like, I was at my stepdaughter's house the other day, and there's one of a mariachi with a guitarrón, and he's very cool looking. It's like, wow, I forgot all about him. And that's just to the point of, if you don't document it, it will be like you didn't do it. It'll be like it never happened. Sandra Cisneros taught me that. She said, write it down, take a picture of it, do whatever you need to do, because we need to document it, because if we don't, it'll be like it never happened. We never happened.
And she wrote the foreword to the book.
She wrote the foreword to the book, and I will be forever grateful for that. She is intimately familiar with my work. She's given me several commissions. At least one of them is in her house in San Miguel, and she knows the work so much better than, frankly, almost anybody else who wrote an essay for the book. So the fact that she wanted to do this, was willing to do this, really meant a lot to me, because she has insights that nobody else has. We have known each other almost since she established her Macondo program.
A writer's workshop.
A writer's workshop, which has grown into be this wonderful, fabulous, wonderful thing. And I did some interior design work for her early when she was building the second house, her writing studio, behind her what had been her purple house on Ginther Street. And so we've known each other a really long time, and what I've asked her to do, along with our other comadre, Ellen Riojas Clark, is when I have a weird idea about something, I gather the three of us together and I say, here's my idea, tell me if you think it's a good idea or if I should drop it and find another idea. So I call it like a creative consortium. It's a brain trust of, what do you think about this? And if you love it, how would you go about pulling it together if you were me? And would you like to participate? So almost every creative endeavor I've ever done, going all the way back to the Huipiles series, which became an exhibition with the Smithsonian Latino Center in 2006, they have been integrally a part of counsel and advising and participating with that. So it's a deep friendship based on mutual respect. And in Sandra's case, although really not in Ellen's, based on love for dogs.
We won't hold it against Ellen.
We won't. She's got so many other good qualities.
Well, you mentioned huipiles. People might not be familiar with the word huipiles, but chances are they have seen them.
Yes.
But they are basically your traditional indigenous embroidered beautiful blouses. You're wearing one right now. They are featured pretty distinctly and quite heavily in most of your artwork. And so are trees of life.
Yes.
And so, or árboles de vida, as they're also called in Spanish. How was it that you sort of came to work those huipiles and the trees into your artwork and in the manner in which they are used in your artwork?
Well, I'll tell you that in the early 2000s, we made our first trip to Oaxaca, Lionel and I, my husband and I. And, you know, as you're going into shops and talking to people about what they make and what they sell, I saw this, picked up this beautiful garment, woven garment, and it was old when I first saw it. So it was soft, really soft, and hand woven, and you could tell it was hand woven, and it was in two pieces. So it was, yeah, it was sewn down the middle. See, like this?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that the women who weave these weave them on what is called a back strap loom. So this is something that wraps around the woman. She attaches it to a tree or, you know, something stationary. And then she uses her weight leaning forward and back to do the weaving. And so it takes two of these to make a garment.
Wow.
Because you can only weave as wide as you are. Right? And so the one I saw, and I picked it up and I felt it and looked at it, and it had such a spirit, Norma. I just can't, and I can't explain this feeling of the wave of that spirit washing over me. I think it was already probably 50 or 60 years old. The spirit of the woman who made it, the spirit of the woman who had owned it, I felt. And I said, I want to buy this, and I still, you know, I still covet them, and I still collect them and look for new and special ones everywhere in Latin America that I go. It's a Mesoamerican indigenous garment, and just about the prettiest thing, and very intricate, that you'll ever see. Sometimes there's a really, really pretty one, and you go and you ask the weaver that you would like to have one, she'll say, okay, come back next year. Because they take a long time to make. A long time to make. The pattern of the huipil, you read it, and you know where that woman is from. So it is an integral part of identity. You know if you're in Guatemala or if you're in Mexico, what region she's from by the kind of huipil she's wearing and the pattern that it's woven and embroidered in. We just got back from Guatemala, and I would encourage anybody who can, who has the least amount of curiosity about this, to visit Guatemala, because in Guatemala, the indigenous are so present in huge numbers, and everybody is wearing, every woman is wearing a huipil. It's amazing. It's amazing. There was a sea of women in huipiles waiting for people to get off planes at the airport, and you could see the different patterns in the huipiles and in the cortes, the skirts. It's just an amazing, amazing thing. I can't imagine a day when I don't continue to be inspired by it.
And what about the trees of life that you incorporate into your art?
Well, you know, I first encountered the object of a tree of life in a book. I think it's called Mexican Ceramic Trees of Life. Go figure, right? And I was thumbing through that, and didn't have good gluing on the binding, and it was kind of coming apart, and the leaves of the book were loose, coming loose. And I was painting a woman, and I didn't have much of an idea at that point if I wanted to combine the woman with huipil patterns or textile patterns, or if I wanted to do something new. And the page just flew off onto my work surface. And you could see it. You could see that maybe this girl would look really cool with this, with a big, beautiful one of these things behind her head. I sketched one out and loosely painted it. And I went and I said to Lionel, I have something to show you, and I want to see what you think about it. And so I turned the canvas around, and he said, oh, my God, I've never seen anything like that before. I think you should do as many of those as you can. And I said, great. And I turned around, and I took my canvas, and I knew what I was going to be doing for as long as I was going to be doing it, which just turned out to be a long time. Because people see it as an aura. People see it as a crown. People see it as a headdress. And I think of it as a thought bubble. Like, this is what this woman, this is what's driving her thoughts or her feelings at the moment, what she's thinking about. I've done several which are kind of representative of a woman's whole life, important symbols from important places and people and things. But then I began to get intrigued by the idea of listening to a woman and finding maybe a seminal story from the life. And that became really exciting to me. So that's what I like to do at the moment. So there's a painting in here that I did for a woman who was telling me a bunch of stories from her life and all this. And she said, well, whatever you do, you have to put a snake in it. Now, why, Lourdes, do I need to put a snake in it? And she said, well, this one time I went with my little girl, my daughter when she was a little girl, and we were down at the coast. I want to say maybe South Padre Island or something, at the Texas coast anyway. And she said, I took her down to a dune because I wanted her to experience a dune and see the ocean from the point of view of the dune and talk about a dune and why they're important, la la. And she said, while we were standing there, from out of nowhere, a snake came and bit me on the leg. And she said it was a very poisonous snake. All I could do was say, let's try to make it back up to the road. There was nobody coming either way. It looked like no one would ever come. I'm getting sicker and sicker by the moment. And then finally, whoever they are, the Coast Patrol, and picks us up. And I nearly died, and this is this woman talking. She said she nearly died, and she was in the hospital for months. And she nearly lost her leg. And then she picked up her skirt and showed me the scar on her leg. Mm. It was big and beautiful in its own way. And then she said, but you know what? It was the best thing that could ever happen to me because my marriage was bad. I didn't know what I wanted to do with my career. I got out of that marriage. I went back to school. I got a PhD in early childhood education. And then I met the love of my life, and my life is completely different since that moment at the beach. So when you look at that painting, you see that it is really all about that. The woman is holding
a snake. She's holding the snake. Yeah, I've seen that.
It's running through mm-hmm. her arms and fingers. There's two giant leg milagros hanging off the tree.
That's what that's about. Okay.
That's what that's about. And sand dollars and fish and dunes and grass and mostly the snake. And I love that I can take that turn and look for those seminal moments and make a whole story out of that.
What would you say has been your most proud accomplishment as an artist?
Well, there have been a few. But I'm going to have to say this book. This book is my proudest accomplishment as an artist. I passed the idea around by Ellen, and I accumulated a bunch of things to look at.
You got your comadres together.
And the comadres and And I'm thinking, maybe a book, you know, what do y'all think? And Ellen said, you have to. I had no idea that you painted this many things. And I said, oh, this is tip of the iceberg, but but yeah. And she said, yeah, you have, you must do that. That's, I don't think anybody knows the extent of your body of work and the fact that it's very focused and unique in style and stuff. So yeah, so that was a few years ago, because as you know, this
just like things, museum exhibits, they take a few years.
They take a few years, unless you don't do anything else, you know. And the stars line up, and the stars lined up with Trinity University Press, because a previously really good relationship with Tom Payton over there, and because they had published Revolutionary Women of Texas and Mexico that Ellen and Jennifer Speed and I did 4 years ago, something like that. And so I felt comfortable approaching Tom and saying, I know you guys don't do art books per se, and he said, I don't think you do, but would you be interested? And they took it to their committee, and then they came back and said, yeah. So, and the other thing is, my paintings take a long time to do, and so they are expensive to buy. And this feels, it feels good to me that someone who likes my work can have it for under $50. That's a big milestone. Concern.
People can also walk around downtown San Antonio and see samples of your work at no cost.
That's true. Like, free. Yeah. Okay. You just told them they didn't have to buy the book.
Well, no. Well, they're getting their vitamin D.
Yeah. Well, they're getting their vitamin D. No, it's true. Public art has been a huge part of my practice. In fact, I call the mini murals in the lobby of TPR public art, because they're designed for people to see that are walking by. Because you have these beautiful giant glass walls, and so the gallery is visible from the outside. And so to me, that's public art. And then in the next block are the tile murals that Lionel and I did for San Pedro Creek, the Gloriosa Historia de San Pedro Creek, in 5 episodes. So, man, if you want to get a headache trying to figure out how many symbols are in a painting, you just go down there between Commerce and Dolorosa Street on San Pedro Creek.
Stand there.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely.
What's coming up next for you? Do you have any projects in store?
Well, here's what's coming up next. So for the past now almost 2 years, Lyle and I have been working on two projects, our Querétaro project and this book. And what that means, Norma, is that I'm a year and a half behind on the stuff I had already promised to do. So my next project is to get caught up with the paintings I have promised people, and then I'll put my thinking cap on about moving on.
Kathy Sosa is a San Antonio-based artist who's half of an artist couple with Lionel Sosa. They've both collaborated on a massive public art project a stone's throw from Texas Public Radio called La Gloriosa Historia de San Pedro Creek. This series of tile murals and dozens of Kathy Sosa's paintings are featured in the new book, Mestizaje, The Feminist Art of Kathy Sosa. It features a foreword by famed Chicana writer Sandra Cisneros and essays by Latino art expert and collector Ricardo Romo, Latinx art historian Carla Stelwig, and historian Jennifer Speed, who co-edited the essay collection Revolutionary Women of Texas and Mexico with Sosa and Ellen Riojas Clark. See some examples of Sosa's art at tpr.org. Kathy Sosa will be the special guest at a Maverick Book Club event by Trinity University Press about her book, Mestizaje. It will be hosted at Texas Public Radio's downtown headquarters in San Antonio, which also houses some of Sosa's artwork. The talk takes place Thursday, January 16th at 7 p.m. Central, and will be moderated by writer and Borderlands Humanities Professor John Philip Santos. It's free to attend. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.